I'm Farrell.
Hey, I'm Ness.
And I'm Kyle.
And this is our personal therapy.
Hello, and welcome to Our Personal Therapy. It is at this time that we would like to mention that we are in no capacity licensed or professional therapists. Just to clear the air on any confusion that might arise from the fact that we call this podcast Our Personal Therapy. Today, we are starting the conversation on the Kubler-Ross model for grief, the first stage being denial.
A real light note to start the podcast.
Well, we're going to talk about dark, deep parts of life.
Yeah, you know.
Kind of our mission statement, if you will, is the three topics we plan on covering throughout our podcasts are psychology, philosophy, and life. So that's kind of all-encompassing, just different aspects of life that we experience as human beings while we journey through this spaceship through space.
I think we just kind of found that, we just tend to have these conversations and we're like, hey, if we record them, that's a podcast.
Yes.
Pretty much how the idea started, yeah, was let's hit record.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. Then we don't have to do anything else. I mean, like, it's just us being us, talking about things we like to talk about, you know, not that we're professional or anything, but we just... I don't know, maybe we like to talk about it, maybe you like to talk about it.
Yeah, maybe it'll spark discussion, mm-hmm. which we like.
Like, the idea for the podcast started by Farrell and I talking in my basement, just talking.
Till, like, what, 6, 7 in the morning?
Yeah, we definitely did that on more than one occasion. And it's like, we're getting into some deep topics, like, we're working through life together, and maybe people would benefit from... the conversations we have.
I think we just get so bored so easily. And, you know, we just need... And I think a lot of people do. I think a lot of people would really like this sense of authenticity, vulnerability.
Yeah, we're just going to air out all of our dirty laundry over the course of... the months to come with the podcast. Just being vulnerable, being real. It's what we believe in. It's what we stand for. And just, I guess you'll experience that with us.
Yeah, just thinking things and saying stuff. And yeah, just.
Yeah.
Exactly. Thank you.
And then came Ness.
Then came Ness.
I came over to hang out with Kyle and Farrell, and I thought we were just hanging out, but apparently it was a test to see if I could be on the podcast.
Yeah, because I do that.
And now I'm here.
So I'm like a sociopath.
Yeah.
I mean, what? No, no.
Happy to be here. Happy to be here.
Oh, good. Okay. That's what she thinks.
Yeah, in reality, like, we're just... yeah. The stuff we go through is not the daily vapid, oh, how was your day? My day was great. How was yours? Oh, my day was great. Bye. You know, it's not the surface level conversations. We're getting into deep stuff. It's stuff we've gone through in life. It's anything and everything.
I think it's not like we're some geniuses or whatever. It's just, I think everybody has these thoughts, but a lot of people, I don't know, I've been taught that maybe...
you can't share them?
Exactly, yeah. To keep their thoughts, to just be, you know, polite within civil society, to just, be a part of whatever system.
Yeah, I don't want to ruin your day with the stuff I'm going through, so I'm just going to say I'm doing fine.
Mm-hmm.
And... that's exactly the opposite of what we're going to do here. We're here to ruin your day with the stuff we've gone through / are going through.
Exactly. Yes.
But you're here by choice. You're not stuck in an elevator with us forced to have a conversation about how our day's going.
Not yet.
One day.
Farrell's really leaning into the sociopath fight. So anyways, back to the Kubler-Ross model of grief. It's not a universally held model, but it is fairly popular. It's popped up quite a bit in popular culture. I know for a fact it was in, I want to say, Deadpool 2. I believe they brought it up. I think his name was Bob. And Ryan Reynolds is like, no more speaking parts for you, Bob, because he screws it up. But stage one is denial. And stage two is anger. Stage three is bargaining. Stage four is depression. And stage five, final stage, is acceptance. So we're going to dedicate an episode to each stage. Today's is denial. And the thing about the different stages, it's kind of a natural progression. That's how we see it anyways, is that it's just the natural flow of coming to terms with what is a new reality, whether it be loss of a loved one, falling out with a friend, loss of a job, having to move. There's all kinds of things that drastically change your life and will send you into a grief spiral. And this is just simply the natural progression in how you will process it, or is believed to be by the Kubler-Ross model. So we kind of see them as gates. The sequentiality of walking through different gates or levels, right? Denial being the first one, flowing into anger and so on. Don't have to keep going through it, but hopefully you guys get it, get what we're talking about.
But those gates are very dynamic, because when you go through those gates, it kind of like you're unlocking them, but it makes it possible for you to go back. So when you go through denial, it kind of opens up that gate, and then you go through anger, but you can go back to denial at some points. But you can't go forward unless you get through that next stage. So can't move on to bargaining unless you... Sorry, bargaining? Yeah, you can't go on to bargaining unless you get through that anger stage. So it's kind of like when you play Super Mario and you can go back to the different worlds that you've unlocked, but you can't go forward until you complete that level. And that's how we see the gates and how they're dynamic in the way that they work and the way that the method works.
And there's lots of criticism that the model comes under from people that just don't want to be boxed into to a model. They'll deny having gone through a certain stage. But in reality, some people will not only everyone does experience the stages often very differently, especially in different circumstances. There's so many factors that go into it. It's not something that's super simple. It's a complex model that has been oversimplified, but in reality, some people will only experience a stage very briefly. Like, people will be like, oh, I didn't go through denial. Well, they may have only experienced it for like a few seconds, right? Where they got some bad news and just their initial thought is, no, that can't be true. Like, you've seen it in TV and movies all the time where somebody's like, no, no, it's not true. That's right.
And it can even just be, I think, a difficulty to processing this new reality, right? An attempt to stay within, or not even, it's not even conscious necessarily, but just the attempt to stay within that reality that was before that event. I think that's just natural. And I think that maybe denial in and of itself is kind of, yeah, a simplification of that, right? First accepting that event that has happened, or first being able to come to terms
. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. That kind of initial stage feels kind of like, I feel like hopelessness would be the best way to describe that part. Because, mm-hmm. Yeah, like, you've lost this reality that you were living in, but you don't want to accept it yet. So, like, I compare it to a Taylor Swift song on her Lover album. It's called Soon You'll Get Better. And in the bridge, it just says, like, I hate to make this all about me, but, like, oh, no, I forgot the lyrics. It says, I hate to make this all about me, but who am I supposed to talk to? What am I supposed to do if there's no you? And it's kind of just like, that couldn't have happened. That could not have happened, because if that happened, what the heck do I do? Like, how, like, that would, that just can't happen. You're kind of just like, what, huh? Like, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, one of the, I guess, best examples that I can think of from cinematic history would be from The Empire Strikes Back, Star Wars Episode 5, when Luke finds out the big reveal from the movie where, you know, Darth Vader, this villain that the scourge of the Empire, would that be the accurate description?
A scourge?
I don't know. I love that. I love that description. I just don't know if it's fitting. But anyways, like, Darth Vader is this huge villain in the within the Star Wars universe, right? Where it's just like people shudder at his name. And Luke has gone almost his whole life thinking, well, a good portion of his life thinking Darth Vader killed his father.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's finding out that he is in fact his father.
Totally. Like, what does that? Yeah, what does that mean?
Well, and then
for
like,
now,
his,
right? Like,
yeah, like his initial reaction is just like, no, that's not true. That's impossible.
Yeah.
Because yeah, given everything that he's known up to this point, like, it is impossible.
Right.
There's so many details missing. Like, wait, okay. Well, then if. Yeah, right. Like, well, if that is the case, and if that Darth Vader is my father,
I have several questions.
Yeah, right. Like, and I think that that happens to all of us in whatever that case may be. Like, whatever that loss is.
Yeah,
that there's all these variables that we've not taken into account. Wait, how did this happen? This can't be true, especially because like this has never happened before.
It's unprecedented.
Yeah. So now at this point, this just changes everything about your life, or maybe not necessarily everything, but just depending on the severity of what was lost, will have. The magnitude of that impact will be, I guess, more or less substantial.
Yeah, like it's going to color your world in some capacity, but it's going to be different, right? Like depending on the magnitude of the event, right? For Luke, I mean, he's been able to hate this person who's his number one enemy. And now he's like, wait, you may be the only surviving relative that I currently have.
Yeah.
Maybe I can make this work. Like,
yeah.
I mean, that's where he comes around to eventually.
Yeah, exactly.
But like
yeah.
in that moment, he's yeah. going, wait a second, I can't just lop off your head and be done with it?
Like, exactly, yeah. And I mean, like also his other only existing family beforehand, he had thought his only existing family was killed by...
as a result,
guy,
yeah,
as a
yeah,
result,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
by that guy's soldiers,
on
by
his orders,
right? Right. So it's like basically, well, he killed his. This is so much.
There's a lot going
there's
into
a lot,
this.
A little bit. A little bit going on. It's nothing small.
But that's just it. Like grief doesn't exist in a vacuum. There's so many complexities to it because. The rest of life keeps moving on as well, right? Like,
yeah. So the degree of which that magnitude happens, I think, it would kind of determine the ability, one's ability to leave that denial stage.
Yeah.
Right. Because yeah, it's easy to like, oh, my dog died. That is a thing that happened. I've been expecting this.
That's not true. That's impossible.
Right. And it's like, well, this is possible, clearly. Yeah. You know, or like, this is sad and it's not a good thing. Obviously, it's happened. It's a very difficult thing at that time. But it's a lot different than... yeah, I mean, like, just yeah, that example of, like, Luke's parents. That I mean,
yeah.
like, or some kind of real... massacre, you know, like we're seeing, I mean, we're currently seeing that right now, like in the Middle East, like, you know, all these people that one day, just one day, the nature of their entire country has changed, right? Perhaps, right, that level of grief can happen so unexpectedly. And that would be a whole lot more difficult, I think, to get through and to accept when things just change on that level. That can happen in your individual life on the micro scale. How difficult would that be to accept?
I think in a situation like that, with denial, you'd probably move out of denial fairly quickly because it would be happening all around you. Like, you just... you'd want to deny it to be able to say, no, this couldn't have happened. I'm just dreaming. Yeah. But I think very quickly you wouldn't linger there.
No.
You know,
totally.
Like, I think that's
something. But the shock, the initial shock.
The initial shock is what causes the denial, right?
Exactly. And that of, and that's just one example. But yeah, like anything of that magnitude, that initial shock is going to be so much.
It's almost like when your computer gets overwhelmed with programs running on it and you have to like shut everything down and start back up and you're kind of opening one program at a time again.
Mm-hmm.
That's effectively what the grief model is doing, right? Like the initial denial stage is like, nope, this isn't happening, shut down. And then sort of processing, as you process, you're kind of letting information in little by little in order to process it not only thoroughly but also healthily. So like the denial stage is almost it is a good thing because it prevents you from just like going insane, because you may have to carry that grief for the rest of your life. Right, if it's the loss of a loved one, you're probably that's going to affect everything. So if that's the case, imagine feeling all of the emotion over the course of the rest of your life all at once. Like, you just wouldn't be able to handle it. You wouldn't be able to process it. So denial actually helps you through that, right?
Yeah, you totally. Yeah, exactly. It just works as this buffer, so that you can slowly move into that emotionally, so you can slowly come to terms with your new reality one little piece at a time, one little step at a time. So that you are not overwhelmed by exactly what you're saying, by this severity of,
I guess, life-altering event.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, we've talked about how the different stages, the different stages will be affected differently by different types of grief, right? I think we said it's easier to linger within denial when you sort of have a falling out with a friend, because there's still that chance of like redeeming the friendship. So it's kind of easier to linger there because you're like, well, no, this isn't true. Like, I can fix this, right? Which sounds actually kind of like bargaining. But denial and bargaining are very similar in that way, where when it's not a lost life or a lost loved one, that it's kind of easier to linger there because of actually having an... There's the potential. There's the potential to repair the friendship. There's the potential to make it work, to whatever, right? And so it's easier to linger there. Whereas, you know, anger and depression, it's easier to linger there when it is the loss of a loved one, because of just the inability. Like, you can deny somebody's death for only so long, right? Eventually that reality is going to get through to you and you're going to be like, oh, this person's gone. But then it's easier to stay angry because you can't do anything about it, right? There's that sort of kindredness between the anger and depression in that helplessness, right? I think. I don't know. I personally haven't experienced a whole lot of grief in my life in respect to, like, loss of loved ones. So I'm not the best person to talk about this.
Totally, totally.
And we've talked about that. Well, like, I mean, I've personally lost two grandparents, and I wasn't very close with them. Like, it wasn't that they were distant or terrible people or anything. It's just when they passed, it was sort of like, okay, this is life now. Like, I was able to process it fairly quickly just by the nature of the relationship, by, I don't know, I guess a very decent understanding of how life works from an early age, where it's like, well, old people die, like
yeah
I don't know, like, I've always
and exactly like, yeah. I was saying, like, that shock, right? Yeah. That shock just wasn't there.
Yeah,
it's not to say that this is, like, you know, it's not a celebration that they're, well, you know, that they're dead, but it's
right.
Just, you know, you're not like, that's a good thing.
Yeah, I wasn't saying it was a good
thing. It's just a neutral.
Yeah,
it just is. It just, that is what happens when a person gets old. This is just how, you know, this is how nature works.
Yeah, I don't know where that came from, but I kid you not, I was in grade 3, found out my grandfather had passed away. He lived, I think, in Calgary at the time. And, like, I went to school, normal, and I was, like, walking down the halls, normal. And I was, like, turn into people and be like, hey, my grandfather died last night. Like, they're like, are you okay? I'm like, yeah, I mean, he lives in Calgary. What do I care? Like, I mean,
and I'm the sociopath.
Like,
here, yeah.
I think I scared my teachers. I was just so okay.
Yeah.
But I somehow understood it and wasn't, I guess, emotionally impacted from, oh my gosh, this was a shocker. Like, he was dying of cancer for several months, saw it coming. Same thing years later when my other grandmother passed away.
Now, did you have an emotional connection, a strong, at least, emotional connection with?
I would argue it wasn't a strong emotional connection.
Right, and I think that because of that, because it's just a kind of a more logical, this is my grandfather.
Yeah.
You may have a more logical response to that. Versus, if you had more of a deeper emotional relationship, then your response may be that, in that emotional space.
Oh, absolutely. Like, I basically was just Spock, where I'm just like, well, this is the logical conclusion that
totally.
This person has passed away.
And which I think is fair, because that's just, you're not wrong.
But grade 3? Like,
totally.
I'm not trying to make myself sound special, but to me, doesn't sound normal.
Well, it's certainly.
Looking back, it's like, was I a psychopath?
And it's not to say that it doesn't sound normal. It definitely doesn't. But it's not necessarily bad, right? It's not that which is normal, that which is the majority, is that which is good necessarily. And in that same way, like, for myself, when I was 14, my father died, and that was very sudden. For myself, though, the real, I don't know, it's grief, but the real response, the real, I guess, difficult time I had afterward was also similarly not on that emotional level. It was on a more practical level of the fact that, like, he was the sole provider for us, and if he is gone, therefore the money is gone. Where do we get money now? That is a thing we need to survive. So how do we now survive? Versus, you know, being upset and like, oh no, my dad's dead, which is an entirely fair response, obviously, but. Yeah, that's not the one that I had. And yeah, I've come to learn I'm not some soulless person because of that, because my relationship with my father was not very close. He was quite absent. To say the least, at best, he was absent and neglect, at worst, like neglectful, almost to the point of abuse. And so when he was gone, it was more of a relief. And so I think that these things can affect you differently, right? It's not, and I think that that's something else, is to come to that point of acceptance, acceptance of the full reality of it, regardless of whether you want to or not, regardless of whether you think it's good or makes you a good person or not, or if it was a healthy response that you had at the time, to just fully search within yourself and pull out that truth of that event in its entirety, I guess, just warts and all.
Sometimes you're forced into a lot of things when it comes to grief and when it comes to those big things. Like when I was 13, my mom passed away, and I was very much like Farrell, like in the practical sense where I was forced to grow up. I was 13, but like our home was very like traditional. So my mom would like work from home and like make supper for us. So it was like ready when we got home from school, and it was like whatever. And so when she was gone, like those tasks like naturally fell to me. Like nobody was saying like you have to do this, like you have to make supper every day and like you have to clean the house, but like they kind of just naturally, I felt like they were put on me. And so I had to grow up so fast, and like that's just the crazy part. And yeah.
Well, like who at what point decided that grief should look a certain way? Like, sometimes, even when it's just, like, bad news about something, it's almost expected that you're supposed to break down and cry. Mm-hmm. Or if you're a man, mm-hmm. you're supposed to be stoic and not feel anything and not cry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, there's sort of these rules that somehow societally have impacted us, but in reality, it's like, we need to grieve how we need to grieve.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes people need to process things in a certain stage a lot more than they have to process things in another stage.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, like, it's just, I think people should learn to be comfortable with where they're at in their grief, in their stage. And I think there's a certain point where you're kind of like, okay, you've been hulking out for 10 years. It's time to maybe put the bottle down and just see somebody, like mm-hmm. see a professional therapist. But like barring an extreme example like that, I think mm-hmm. it should be sort of a natural progression where you're not rushing through the stages. Mm-hmm. Like even when we say the word denial, it almost has this negative connotation.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, you're in denial.
Exactly.
But it's yeah. like, okay, but if that's where you're at, you should be okay with that
mm-hmm.
because you need to process that. And if you try to rush it, you're going to probably like rubber band. Like we said, you can go back to previous mm-hmm. like mm-hmm. stages. Like mm-hmm. you're going to rubber band back to denial because you didn't properly process it. So it's just, yeah, don't.
That's interesting what you said about the like the comment about like just putting the bottle down, because I feel that, and I have experienced this in my own life, that people, if they do not fully come, just accept how they are feeling and how what is going on inside of them, oftentimes they will be uncomfortable with, you know, what some people call their demons, rather than really getting to know themselves, they numb these things because they're told that these are wrong, and that it would actually be better for them to numb these feelings than to feel them, because at the very least, if they're not feeling them, then perhaps, or rather, that feeling them makes them a bad person or a wrong person, just that they should not be feeling the way in which they do. Their internal subjective experience is just invalid. And so and so if that's true and your feelings are invalid, well then how could you ever possibly come to acceptance? Unless you fully come to accept all of which you are feeling. Because I think that the feelings are the effects of that event. And if you want to fully accept the event and move on with your life, then you're going to need to feel those feelings, regardless of what anybody tells you of how you should be feeling them or whether you should be feeling them or anything.
I think it's crazy, like, just how many different variables there are to grief. And, like, me and Farrell have talked sometimes about how we've both lost a parent, and his was very sudden, and mine was kind of, like, my mom was sick for a while before it happened, and Farrell said once that, like, some people think that, like, his was very sudden, and he was like, oh, it might have been a little bit easier if it was, like, dragged on a little bit, like, if he was sick. And I was like, oh, I, like, think the opposite. Like, I think it'll be easier if it was, like, sudden, because then, like,
totally, yeah.
Like, if it's prolonged, you're living in that for so long. And then even when it does happen, like, people respond so differently. Like, for the whole time my mom was sick, like, I always, in the back of my head, I just had this hope that, like, she would get better no matter what happened, even when it did happen. So I had a little bit of denial for a little bit, because I was like, no, like, what? And then some of my other family members who literally went through the same thing as me were just like, yeah, like, we saw the end of that road. Like, they were like, yeah, it's kind of how we thought it would end. And I was just like, what? Like, I did not see that coming. And it's just the different variables and the different how you react to things is just, yeah, there's just so many.
Yeah, like the grass is always greener.
Yeah.
Or better, the devil you know. Mm-hmm.
Everyone experiences it differently, even if it's the same event, the same relationship. Siblings will mourn the loss of a parent differently, because the relationship is still probably different. And even if it's the same, like, you're an individual with different emotions and different experiences.
Yeah, no matter what, that relationship, like, is different.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
It just is not the same one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the result, even if it looks very similar, well, there's going to be some nuances within that.
Which makes the idea of a quote-unquote normal grieving process sound absolutely ridiculous when you think about it in those terms, where it's like the microcosm of two siblings experiencing the loss of a parent being different. How can you possibly expect there to be sort of a system or model? Which is why I think when it comes to the Kubler-Ross model, it's purposely vague.
Mm-hmm.
Right, where it's sort of like, this is a process that you will go through, and it's not putting somebody in a box, because people are going to be in denial. Even something that sounds as simple as just being in denial is going to be different. Right? People are different types of angry. Wow, shocker. Some people are quiet angry, and some people get loud and boisterous angry. So it's purposely vague, I think.
Yeah, I think that these labels, like, of each stage are kind of just there so that we have something to refer to them as, right? Because they're so huge. Like, it's an entire emotion, right? Yeah. Like, it's, which I guess some people different people experience their emotions differently, but I tend to view emotions as incredibly deep and just expansive things, like you're saying. Like, it's all anger, even if it's quiet anger or loud anger, violent anger, self directed anger, outward anger. All of these things are anger.
They're labels to help guide us, not labels to restrict us.
Exactly, because
right?
It's like I don't consider that. I only view this as anger if I'm being outward with it. I don't look at that as anger if it's inward or any other variation of things.
Yeah, like how common is the phrase, you don't look depressed?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when my mom passed away, like, my family, even to this day, likes to say, like, wow, you bounced back really fast. Or, like, you, like, went down a great path, like, after it happened. And, like, that, like, yeah, that's great. But, like, to me, that is not how it went down. Like, mm-hmm. when it happened, like, there was a months, and, like, obviously even now, where I'm, like, I'm not okay. Like, that was really, because it also affects, like, when you talked about siblings and how it affects siblings differently, because if it happens to siblings, obviously those individuals are going to be in different places in life. So when it happened, like my brothers, I have two older brothers. They were, I think, in high school or out of high school already. And I was 13, so I was a year away from going into high school. And I was a girl, and I had just lost my mom. So, like, yeah, it's so different. And, like, you can't just look at someone and be like, they don't look depressed. They look fine because they're smiling and they're like hanging out with friends and they seem happy. Like,
and their favorite color is yellow and not black.
Yeah. Like they're wearing a lot of light colors. Like, yeah. And that's kind of something that my family still talks about, how like, oh my gosh, you're doing so great. And like that partly, I feel like that might be me because I have learned to hide it, which mm-hmm. is probably not good, but yeah. So,
but people mask things. I think the deeper that a person feels something, the more that they mask.
Oh my gosh, I feel that.
Right? Yes. like I feel like my entire life or growing up, I was always viewed, or I was always told that I was a more monotone person. But
what?
I was right. Yeah. Knows me for a long time. But whereas that's not my experience of my emotions.
Yeah.
Right. I know that I've always been a very I've always viewed myself as being too emotional, mm-hmm. whereas the outside world is always viewed as, well, or it's felt as if a lot of the outside world, yeah, has viewed me as this kind of robot.
Emotionless.
Exactly.
Stoic.
Yeah, exactly.
He's such a deep thinker, that Farrell.
Super pretentious. Yes, I am the genius.
Well, he's so pretentious for actually spending time to think things through instead of pulling out the first thing that comes to his mind.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or like a person is a quiet person, therefore they must not be thinking much. And it's like, or it's the opposite. Or,
sorry.
No, you.
I sort of feel like that too, because people have told me that, like, in crisis, they kind of see me as like level headed, and like mm-hmm. if there's a crisis, that's when I'm like, let's go, like, just like that's when I'm focused. Mm-hmm. But like when there's crisis, like in my head, it is not a fun time. Like
no.
I may look like I'm doing good and like figuring things out, but mm-hmm. that is.
But I think that's also instinct. I mean, because it's like,
yeah,
who
honestly,
else?
Yeah, because. I've been like, I think we talked about this as the Grey's Anatomy. I think it's a scene where Derek is proposing to Meredith. And he says, like, in the face of crisis and in the face of like danger and stuff, like, you don't like lose your head because you've seen worse. And I think that kind of describes it. Like, when there's crazy things happening, like, it doesn't really faze me that much because, like, relate to, like,
yeah.
I felt that in school a lot when I went into high school. Mm-hmm. My friends would be talking about, like, just to me, the stupidest things, like, oh my gosh, this boy didn't talk to me today and I like him, or my nail broke, or just like normal high school things that they can complain about. That's whatever. But to me, it was like, oh my gosh, like, shut up.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, right. Comparatively.
I wish my problems were
yeah,
that small.
Yeah, I wish I had a broken nail. Like,
totally. Right. And I think that. But that's the thing. But for those people, that is the biggest thing that they've ever experienced.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? But also in our same way, like, it could always have been worse. Mm-hmm. Or in some way, or like there are people who live in a war-torn country.
Yes.
It's like, I don't. Sure, my personal home life is incredibly chaotic, but outside at school, I have that school experience mm-hmm. where I could still be like that. That
yeah.
hasn't been taken away from me. But at the same time, those people might even view in a different way. Or these like,
yeah, thank God I don't have to go to school.
Yeah, yeah, school sucks. I hate school. Oh man, that's dark.
Laugh through the pain.
But that's not to say that people should. But in that same way, then, if you compare this level of grief or of trauma to another's smaller, I guess, level of trauma, then it's like you can also look at like and see that there's a higher level of trauma.
Mm-hmm.
But on top of that, there's a higher level and a higher, 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 higher.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always been like that. It's always...
Well, there's always going to be somebody worse off, right? Yeah. There's always going to be somebody better off. Statistically speaking,
yeah.
There's always going to be somebody better off, and there's always going to be somebody worse off.
Right, what does better off even mean?
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, well, if you look at somebody who never has want for money, they can literally buy anything they want. Like, they see it, it's theirs. Mm-hmm. Like, that's it. Like, not that they don't have problems, but there's lots of problems that 98% of the population of the world experiences, right? That they don't.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it's just a different rule set. It's a different game.
That's exactly it. There's a different value set, right? Because,
yeah.
I mean, like there are still out there tribes that just live within nature.
Yeah.
Right, like you go down to, I don't know.
Oh man, they have it so bad.
Yeah, right. And they don't even understand why a person would need all this material. Wow, I have. Look at all of the things I have. Like,
yeah.
What is that exactly? Like, why does that make a life more valuable? Because in the grand scheme of things, too. I mean, like, let's look at like, I don't know what. Bill Gates. Look at how the classic go-to. I was thinking of Amazon. Jeff Bezos is what I was thinking of, and I couldn't think the name. But Jeff Bezos, more modern current example, or even Elon Musk, is like you can see. It's like he has magnitudes more money, more material wealth than I do, or than any of us do.
Yeah, I mean, I wish I had the money to just launch a car into space just cuz.
Totally. But then when you look at that, like, space, right? But in the grand scheme of things, it's like, wow, he has how many more grains of sand, basically? Like, when you look at how tiny the Earth even is in the galaxy, it's like, well, what's the difference between what I have and what Bill Gates, any of these guys have? What's the difference? Like, that's not big. We're basically the same in that. And then you look at but then within the universe, how small is the galaxy? But at the same time, we can go inward and we can go, like, but look at how big I am compared to an ant, or look at how much material wealth I have compared to somebody who's actually starving in, you know, somewhere that we've never even heard of.
Yeah, I feel like, kind of to bring it back around, like, I guess the idea is that, like, material wealth doesn't remove you from the human experience.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, like, I think I actually said this a while back, just in our conversations, but I said, like, grief doesn't care about your tax bracket. Like, pain doesn't care about your tax bracket.
No.
If you take a baseball to the chest,
yeah,
doesn't matter how much money you have, you're going to feel that pain, right? So, like, the human experience is feeling pain at some point, and dealing with that pain. And in reality, comparing the level of pain doesn't take away your pain or someone else's. So material wealth doesn't change the need to work through things. And it doesn't diminish the value of who you are as a person. Mm-hmm. Like the fact that you are a person who has an experience, that has emotions, that has pain and joy and like all of these things means that you have value and therefore should actually feel valued regardless of where you're at on that emotional process through life. Mm-hmm. So one thing that I really, really hate is when somebody is going through something and they're trying to be vulnerable and they're trying to open up and they're met with, oh my gosh, I know exactly what you're going through. Because even Farrell and Ness, who at a similar age lost a parent of the same gender to them, don't say that to each other. They're like, hey, here are the similarities. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But at no point are they like, oh, I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, right? No.
Like it's ludicrous. But yeah. Like how many times have you heard that or seen that? Because what you're actually doing in that moment is you're saying your pain isn't as valid. Let's talk about me and my pain.
Yeah.
Right? Like
yeah.
And I think the
cool
note
story, but here's mine.
It's yeah. Like, oh man, that sucks, but I got through it and I'm fine.
Let me one up you.
Yeah. Oh, that's even worse.
Yeah.
When somebody's like, oh, that's nothing.
Well, because some people.
Oh, your dog died? Well, my parent died.
Yeah.
And I think if a person doesn't heal and doesn't come to accept that loss as just a part of their reality, just that just is what it is. That's, I think, what acceptance really is just coming to accept. It is what it is. It just is. It's just now. But if you don't come to, then you may start to identify with that. With I
am the grief.
Yeah, like I am a person who has lost their parent. Like
yeah.
That is right. That is my life. That is who I am. And if and that makes me worthwhile. That makes me valuable.
Yeah.
So if somebody else has gone through what I may perceive to be worse, or what others may perceive even to be worse, well then I have no value.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like I think it's super important to just stop and ask yourself when you're talking with somebody who's experienced grief, it's important to stop and ask, are you relating to the person or are you relating their experience to yourself? Because the difference there is, are you actually trying to care for the person and like help them on their journey?
Mm-hmm.
Or are you trying to make it about you? Are you trying to say, oh, here's where we connect, but really let's talk about me, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's also important within that is to recognize your relationship to the person. Are you
totally.
A close friend? Are you a family member? Or are you like sort of acquaintances or a friend of a friend? Mm-hmm. Like there's a natural sensitivity that needs to come about dealing with people going through things in
mm-hmm.
life. And that is, I think, unfortunately, a little bit rarer than it should be. Right? Like, it's... I think our parents' generation dealt with, you hide things. You
mm-hmm.
you mask everything. Yeah. Oh, man. I'm thinking of... I'm thinking of a country song where it's like, you know... is it Miranda Lambert? Like, yeah, you fix your makeup, you go about your day. Like,
this ain't your mama's broken heart.
Yeah, this ain't your mama's broken heart, right? Where it's just like, you just pick up, you move on.
You just
like,
keep going.
Nobody needs to know what's going on.
Yeah.
And like, our generation swung that pendulum so far to the other side where it's just, let me tell you about why my mental illness makes me valuable and why it makes me more important in this world than you. And it's just like, it's all about us now, where, mm-hmm. you know, it's like you brag about going to see a therapist, where the previous generation would have been like, oh my God, did you know that this person is going to a therapist? Oh, like,
yes,
it's
exactly.
something that you would hide. And now it's like a badge of honor. It's like, mm-hmm. you wouldn't want people to know the pills you were on. But nowadays it's like, well, I'm on all these pills. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah. Yeah. That pain, that suffering makes your existence more valid, more valuable. And yeah, that's where I think the pendulum has shifted from, you know, the more it shifted from that sense of like the more wealth one has, the more someone has it all together, the better that their life is. That the more, but it's not quite pleasure, but the more maybe security that one has, the better for one is, the more valid one's existence is. Versus, you know, what we're seeing now, whereas neither one is really good, because if you do identify, it's not to say you, and again, you should accept if you, let's say if you do, you know, suffer with, let's say, post-traumatic stress disorder, you should accept that so you can understand how to treat yourself better within the world. But you shouldn't be so attached to that label that determines that the level at which that if somebody else comes in with three diagnoses and you only have two that this person is now a better person.
Yeah, like the Pokemon of mental illness, where it's like you gotta catch them all. Like,
yeah, because not to say that it's not valid, like it is totally valid, right? Like, yeah, that really is awful that you struggle with these mental illnesses, and I really hope that, you know, that I would like to do whatever I can to help you out and make your existence a more tolerable one. But don't just go around and, I know that I've personally done this, even myself, just thinking that, well, I've been through more, so I'm better. Look at my badges of honor.
It's almost like a shortcut. Mm-hmm. through the process, mm-hmm. without actually going through the process properly, mm-hmm. which then just leads to it being a bigger issue later.
Yeah. And this idea that it's wrong to feel good.
Yeah.
Right. You don't allow yourself to feel good, to feel happy, to feel joyful, because if you are that, well, then I'm not valid based on my own metric.
Yeah. And I've seen it quite often where people will use an experience or a mental illness diagnosis. Unfortunately, I think it's more often when it's a self-diagnosis. Mm-hmm. So I'm just going to clarify that. Like, if somebody gets an actual diagnosis, they're probably seeing somebody about it and mm-hmm. are actually working through it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I think the danger with self-diagnoses is that you've basically slapped a label on yourself, and then you're going through life going, this is what is preventing me from succeeding in life.
Mm-hmm.
And they, like, people start to use it as a crutch. And the problem with that is that it's like anything they'll try will be half-assed because they have an out if they don't succeed. And they're almost afraid to succeed in life because if they succeed in life, they can no longer use that crutch.
Exactly.
And it's just, that's a cycle that's just so vicious.
Yeah. Because,
you're like, well, this is my crutch. And this is the reason I'm not succeeding. Mm-hmm. This is my excuse mm-hmm. for not being where I want to be in life.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like, that same person will, like, the next day post on Twitter or Instagram where it's like, mm-hmm. today's such a good day. Like, I've been beating this, like, diagnosis' mm-hmm. ass. Like, I'm winning today. And it's like, good. But are you really? Because,
mm-hmm.
like, I want to celebrate with you, but I'm having a hard time believing it mm-hmm. because you didn't do anything today, but you feel good today, but tomorrow you're not going to feel good because you did nothing today. Like, mm-hmm. you're not progressing. You're just kind of bouncing between two points. And unfortunately, and again, I would like to clarify that I am not calling out people who have actually been diagnosed. Mm-hmm. This is mm-hmm. more of the self-diagnosis mm-hmm. grouping of people. But if you're not making your own life better, if you're not progressing, you're going to be stuck. You're going to be in a rut, and then you're never going to get through it because mm-hmm. you're using it as your crutch mm-hmm. and your badge of honor. Mm-hmm. I think the phrase I've kind of quoted before is like, you can't have your mental illness and beat it too.
Right. Yeah.
Like
yeah.
It's one or the other. Like yeah. you're either working through it or you've beaten it, but mm-hmm. you can't say, oh, I've beaten it today. And then the next day, oh, it's mm-hmm. it's beaten me. And mm-hmm. I'm not saying that people mm-hmm. don't struggle. I'm not saying people totally, don't yeah. work through it.
Yeah.
But it's sort of that like false victory.
Now it is a because it is a continuous battle. I do believe that one day you can win and the next day you lose.
Absolutely.
Right. Every single day sometimes can feel like a battle. And yeah, right. So some days you win, some days you lose. But I don't know. I guess just
it's complicated. Like yeah. it's like I'm oversimplifying it.
Totally.
And I may sound like a jerk for saying that, but it's really just it's coming from a place not right. of all these people are useless and they
totally.
Suck. It's from a place of I want to see people actually succeed in life.
Absolutely.
And not just fake it.
Because also, but the thing though is that I have even tried to use for my own self is to view every, let's say, obstacle or everything that has come in my way, every difficult event that I've personally dealt with, view those all as opportunities. Those have all been opportunities to me. It's not that I'm lacking because I went through them. No, I got opportunities that other people didn't get to have. I got opportunities to become a stronger person. Mm-hmm. That another person who has not dealt with the same severity has not. And so I think that leads me oftentimes to having higher expectations over myself because I know how much I can get through. That, well, I can't just allow this to stop me, even if it's reasonable that maybe this should stop me and maybe it'll be healthy if this stopped me. Maybe I should not. Maybe that is pushing myself way too hard and I'm going to burn out super hard. But understanding that if every day is a battle and you overcome each day, then, yeah, you are a strong, powerful person rather than somebody who is weak. I don't know, but with that strength, I guess with great power then though comes great responsibility.
Ooh,
right? With the Spider-Man, right? Exactly. Which I mean, like if you even look at that, I mean Spider-Man really is an anecdote of trauma.
Yeah.
Right? His uncle then dies. And what does he do?
He goes through the process of denying it, getting angry, bargaining by mm-hmm. trying to make things better.
Yeah.
And then getting down about how, well, maybe I'm not good enough to make things better yeah. and then coming to terms with it.
Exactly.
But then continuing to yeah. try and make the world a better place.
Yeah, he lives his life tries to every time, live his life in a heroic manner.
Yeah.
Because that is heroic. You can actually turn these events. The events are not badges of honor, right? These things. Overcoming those events are badges of honor. Those things in and of themselves are not badges. They just happened to you. I think it's a lot better to take an active role, because that's something that can happen. That's actually depression, is that you start to take a passive role in your life, mm-hmm. and all these things keep happening to me, or this thing happens to me, this happened.
The victim mentality.
Exactly. Yeah. Versus taking an active role and realizing that my will does matter. I am not an actual loser, one who loses. I can be a winner. I am a survivor. I'm a winner.
Well, the grief method It isn't the grief method isn't the things that happen to you. It's how you react to those things mm-hmm. happening to you. Mm-hmm. So like when you go through, like for me, when I went through grief in the different stages, you learn a lot about yourself. Mm-hmm. Like I mm-hmm. learned a lot about how I handle anger, how I handle loss, how I handle when crappy things happen in life. Mm-hmm. And it helps you, like you said, to be stronger, because now in life where I am right now, I have versions of myself that were present during that grief that I never want to go back to. Mm-hmm. Like I fight so hard to never go back to the person I was when I was in that anger or mm-hmm. when I was in that mm-hmm. denial or mm-hmm. when I was in that like depression. And like, I just like, sometimes I fight so hard to just not be that person because I know that's not who I want to be. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I feel like you just learn a lot about yourself and about who you actually want to be and how you want to react to things.
Yeah. And that's an opportunity that people, mm-hmm. a lot of people don't have, but you can only have it if you go through these things. It is a price that you pay mm-hmm. in order to actually gain something.
Yeah.
These exactly. traumatic events don't have to be viewed as, I don't want to say a negative, but as maybe purely negative or as something that takes away value from your existence, mm-hmm. but that it is simply another opportunity.
Well, I think the way we worded it before was that conflict either breeds weakness or strength. How you handle the event is going to determine the kind of person you are. It's not that the event happened to you. Traumatic things happen to people mm-hmm. and they learn from it, grow from it, and the people we idolize are the people that get through it and are stronger for it, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you could also argue, as you said, it's an example, it's an opportunity to grow, to be better. Maybe the reason in the first two Spider-Man series, in the Tobey Maguire and the Andrew Garfield series, the writers felt it so necessary to kill off Uncle Ben on screen because that was the turning point for Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. he didn't become Spider-Man truly until Uncle Ben dies. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because that was the traumatic event that made him go, I need to do more than I'm doing. And I mean, they kind of wrote it differently with Tom Holland. It was sort of his own failure, so to speak. He'd already been going through the grief process, trying to be the friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. But he didn't kick it up a notch until, like, he experienced his own failure and his mm-hmm. own, like, helplessness. Like, that scene in Spider-Man Homecoming mm-hmm. where he's trapped under the building. Mm-hmm. And he's just, like, crying and is like, I need help. And that it's like, You want to cry with him and you just want to like stay there with him. Mm-hmm. But then he realizes nobody's coming for him and he has to get through this himself. And he does have the strength to get through it, mm-hmm. which is why it's so powerful when he actually like mm-hmm. gets up and like the music yeah. swells. Yeah. And you're like, I want to cry for a different reason now. Yeah. Because yeah. in reality, it's he took that moment. And he made something of mm-hmm. himself or yeah. realized something yeah. that was already there.
Exactly.
I actually had one of those moments in the last few months. Like, I feel like there always has to be that moment where you have to be just really real with yourself. And I had one of those moments where I was just kind of, it was a really down day. There was a lot of things just like pushing at me. And I just had to be real with myself. And I was like, okay, if tomorrow you woke up and all your problems were gone, everything was fine, and you could do the things that you want, amazing. That's awesome. That would be great. But if that doesn't happen, you need to figure out a way to keep going, or else this mm-hmm. is where it stops. Like, you just like reach this point where you're like, all right, like this is make it or break it. Like, either you keep going, like, and I think that is the Spider-Man moment, like where you realize like, it's me. Like, it. In at the end of the day, it's, like, all on me, like, kind of, I don't know. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But, like, you kind of just be like, all right, we got to keep going. Like, mm-hmm. no one's coming, so you just got to pick yourself up.
Right. Right, like, every hero goes through their trials. Now, also, I'm going to try to communicate this. I might not understand fully.
but you just... dabble in some M&M there for a minute? It's like, what the hell just happened?
Mom spaghetti. Okay, Joseph Campbell's Hero's Journey, right? It states that every hero must leave home, must have this experience that happens to them, this event that changes, this call to action, right? And they must then travel within the underworld, which could be seen as one's own emotions, one's own internal, maybe psyche, subconscious. And then from there, pull out that which they need to keep going and encounter things along the way in which they grow. And then by the end, after going through this experience, after facing these trials, after fighting those demons, they become a new person. They become a stronger person. Luke has to leave home. He then goes on the journey. He then, you know, eventually... by the end of the movie, Luke Skywalker's not the same person. By the end of the movie, Peter Parker is not the same person. Mm-hmm. Right? They are such better people. They've become heroes. And I think that that's what these traumatic events can be looked at as, is these trials that will strengthen a person if you let them.
Yeah, exactly. Even if the trauma is self-caused. Mm-hmm. Like, it's really easy to get down on yourself and blame yourself and say, I'm here because of my own doing. Mm-hmm. I mean, in the not-so-far-off past, I was unemployed for 6 months, couldn't collect EI because I quit my job because I effectively had a mental/emotional breakdown and couldn't handle work anymore.
Sick.
And so, like, I quit and was unemployed for 6 months, and my debt just, like, skyrocketed because I was living off of that. And I had to work through that. I had those moments where I was just like, well, today I got out of bed before 3 p.m. Mm-hmm. That's a win. Mm-hmm. But in reality, that's what I had to work through. And I was like, no, like that eventually became the wake up call for me to go and work on myself, to go, what's wrong here? How can I prevent this from happening in the future? Where I'm at a job, I can't handle it, and I need to work through it. Mm-hmm. And that's just, you know, another example of grief was that my job was paired with mm-hmm. what was going on emotionally and mentally mm-hmm. for me was too much to handle yeah. everything. And yeah. so I experienced grief in the sense of loss of self-identity. Mm-hmm. So it was almost a death of self, but not in a positive moving forward way. It was taking a step back in order to take two steps forward, right? Mm-hmm. And just needing to work through that where it felt self-caused. It was like, I'm where I'm at in life, not where I want to be because of my own actions. Mm-hmm. And that, I don't want to say it's harder for me, but like mm-hmm. for me as an individual, like it seems like mm-hmm. that is much harder for me to get through than it is for me to get over the loss of a loved one mm-hmm. or the loss of a friendship. Although when it comes to loss of friendship, I fight tooth and nail to just do everything on my end to fix things. I mm-hmm. absolutely hate being the reason a friendship fails. Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. And that usually causes the friendship to fail because I become too controlling
totally,
over
yeah.
the friendship.
And I think that the sense of failure, though, is oftentimes... plays a role. Grief is so often viewed as a failing on someone's part. Like, what could I have done to help this person? Is there more? If you lost somebody, is there something I could have done more? Even you may have failed in the way that you handled this. Like, could I have seen them more? Could I have spent more time with them? Did I do enough? But I think we just need to accept that that time is kind of over, but also that it's not a, it's usually not a failing. Like, what else could you have done?
Yeah.
You did your best. Usually, I think most people are really trying to do their best.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's why I'm going to reference the Sam Raimi Spider-Man again in the first one, because I'm more familiar with it than I am with the Amazing Spider-Man movies. But that's, I think, why Peter had such a hard time, because he's like, I could have done something different.
Yeah.
Like, he has that flashback where he recognizes the guy he could have stopped and did nothing, which is why the statement of with great power comes great responsibility holds so much weight for him and is literally like his life motto after that point, because he's like, if I don't do something, bad stuff happens. I think that's actually how Tom Holland words it. Is like, if I don't do something good, then bad stuff is going to happen. But Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man experienced that, where it was just like, I literally could have prevented my uncle from being shot. I can't change that. So his acceptance had to be, I can't change the past. Now moving forward, I have to do everything I can to not have that happen to someone else.
Totally. Also, like, maybe if even if you did fail, even if it was your failing, that does not mean that you are a failure and that you must then continue to fail.
Absolutely. And I think that's a great point to end on. And I would say that everyone's challenge for the week should be finding their Spider-Man moment.
What's
the Spider-Man moment in your life, either in the past or that you need to find moving forward in life? Because I think part of the podcast is just us talking about our experiences and what we relate to pop culture and life and how we work through things. But I think a large part of it is also that we want to help people, right? And if we can offer little tidbits here and there for like, hey, maybe think about this. Here's your provoking thought for the week.
Find the Peter Parker inside of you.
Exactly.
Exactly. Thank you for joining us for our personal therapy.
You can listen to this or any other future podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or Amazon Music, or wherever else you listen to your podcasts.
To stay connected and get updates on future podcasts, you can follow us on social media on Twitter at @opt_pod or Instagram at @opt.pod.
We can't wait to start connecting with you.